Chapter 2 Walking the Nether Plains. Matron Mother Xerath Zor-Lauren joined hands with her mighty nephew, the wizard Sabrak, and began her spell casting. Similarly, the wizard launched into his own casting, the two twining their magical energies into a unique spell, both arcane and divine. Across the altar in the primordial chamber of Q'Zor-Lauren, High Priestess Kiri, Xerath's oldest daughter, held her breath in anticipation. She had never seen this ritual performed before, though she was well-versed in necromancy.
Dwardame,
Sabrak whispered a long while later, evoking the name of one of the fallen drow in the Silver Marches.
Dwardame,
Matron Mother Xerath echoed, and they both repeated the call many times. The body came from inside the stone block altar itself, facial features forming within the stone and growing, rising. Then it was separate from the altar, the body of a slain dark elf torn by swords and axes.
Kiri,
Matron Mother Xerath said sharply, and the High Priestess realized that she was taking too long. She put aside her astonishment and launched into a simple spell to animate the dead. A few moments later, the corpse of Dwardame Zor-Lauren sat up on the altar, then stiffly shifted to the side, legs hanging over the altar slab. High Priestess Kiri looked to Matron Mother Xerath, who nodded, and so Kiri commanded the zombie to stand and walk. The unthinking zombie did walk, directly away from the High Priestess, as ordered. It did not pause when it reached the lip of the primordial's pit. It made not a sound when it pitched over the edge, tumbling through the swirl of the trapped water elementals to land on the lava skin of the godlike beast. The primordial drew Dwardame in. Sabrak blew a great sigh.
This will take us 10 days, he said. I am exhausted already, as are you.
We must, Matron Mother Xerath replied.
In this duty we will salvage the goodwill of the Spider Queen. High Priestess Kiri held her tongue, unsure that the exercise of summoning the corpses from the distant battlefield and properly disposing of them would do any such thing. But they had to try, she knew, for she understood as her mother understood. Lady Loth was not pleased with their failures in the Silver Marches. Perhaps that was why the dark elves killed in that war were so disproportionately Zor-Lauren warriors. So now they would perform their tedious duty, in the hopes that they would garner some measure of forgiveness or clemency from the merciless Spider Queen. Such a task would consume them for hours each day and was no inexpensive feat. Sabrak had to destroy a valuable gemstone for each summoning. Perhaps it would be easier, Kiri thought, but surely did not say, if Matron Mother Xerath simply sent Sabrak to the Silver Marches to physically reclaim the fallen dark elves of Q'Zor-Lauren. But of course her mother would never do such a thing. Sabrak was Xerath's lover now, her partner, and she had secretly elevated him to a position of power nearly equal to her own. And that, Kiri feared, but again dared not speak aloud, might be the truth behind Lady Loth's disapproval. A fireball stole the darkness in a far corner of the great cavern that housed Menzo Berenzon. It was something more than a wizard's blast, Gromph knew, as he watched from his window at the Drow Academy of Sorcerer. Cries drifted across the cavern, echoing. A battle raged, drow against demon likely, or just as likely, demon against demon. The abyssal beasts were thick about Menzo Berenzon now, these ugly creatures of destruction and chaos, wandering freely, untended, uncontrolled. Gromph had lost 2 students caught in a skirmish with a Glabrezu over in the district called the Stench Streets. The body of 1 apprentice wizard had been sent to him in 2 equal-sized boxes. The gates of every house in the city were closed, sealed, every sentry on a nervous edge, every matron mother plotting and fretting in turn, wondering if she might turn a demon to her advantage, or fearing that a horde of the beasts would descend upon her house and obliterate it. They could find no pattern to alleviate their fears. These were demons, changing direction at a whim, destroying simply for the joy of destroying. A low growl escaped the Archmage's lips. What idiocy was this? What demons, literal or figurative, was his arrogant sister unleashing upon the city of Menzo Berenzon?
He heard a knock on his door, but ignored it. More bad news, likely. Another student torn apart by a Glabrezu's giant pincers. A lesser house invaded, perhaps. Another knock sounded, this one more insistent, and when Grumpf didn't respond, he heard, to his absolute astonishment, the door creaking open. "You are fortunate that I did not enable my wards," he said dryly, never turning. "Else you would be a red puddle from which a wounded frog would hop."
"Truly, husband?"
came the surprising reply, the voice of Manolan Fay.
"Perhaps in that event you would find me more attractive."
"What are you doing here?" Grumpf demanded, and still he did not bother to turn to face the priestess.
"The matron mother is quite pleased with herself," Manolan Fay replied.
"The other matron mothers are too busy securing their gates to think about colluding against her. Perhaps if she just burned down House Bayenry, she would have even less to worry about," Grumpf sardonically replied. He took a deep breath and finally turned a serious expression upon the High Priestess. "How many has she summoned?"
"Who can know?" Manolan Fay replied.
"Now the demons are summoning each other. The matron mother might as well have thrown 50 scurvy rats into a nest. The beasts reproduce so efficiently. Except that even scurvy rats have a few 10 days of helpless infancy. The summoned demons are quite mature and capable of havoc from the moment they emerge through the dimensional gate."
"Why are you here?" Grumpf asked again.
"The true matron mother does not sit on the throne of House Bayenry," Manolan Fay dared to whisper.
"What are you suggesting?"
Manolan Fay swallowed hard and struggled for a reply. Grumpf knew well. Not so long before, Manolan Fay and some others, including Grumpf on the periphery of their treachery, had conspired to bring down Quenthal's reign. They had found a weakness, a seam in the matron mother's armor, and one dating back to the time of Troubles. In that chaos, as the gods returned to prominence in Faerun and the divine powers were restored, Matron Mother Ivanel the Eternal, Grump's mother, and the ruler of Menzo Berenzon for longer than the memories of the oldest drow, had channeled the unbridled power of the Spider Queen. Lolth's magnificence had flowed through her as she utterly destroyed House Oblodra, the compound, and almost all of the noble family. The Oblodrans had sought the quietness of the gods, of Lolth in particular, to seek great advantage, for they were an order of psionicists whose magic was not dependent upon such divine beings. A very few Oblodrans escaped the wrath of Matron Mother Ivanel, the wrath of Lady Lolth. Only Kimuriel was now known to Grumpf, but all of the other notables had been slaughtered in the catastrophe except for one. Death would have been too easy for Kiorl Odran, the matron of House Oblodra. No, Ivanel had not killed that one, but had spared her and sent her to the abyss, to the eternal torment of a great Baelor named Ertu. When Manolan Fay and her fellow conspirators had learned of this, they had hatched a plan to rescue the vicious and strangely powerful Kiorl. With her illithid-like psionic abilities, they would turn her upon the then-weakened House Bayenry and the pitiful matron mother Quenthal, who would never survive such an unexpected onslaught.
"Surely the Spider Queen cannot be pleased by these actions," Manolan Fay pleaded. "And surely Lady Lolth knows that the better choice, the better matron mother—"
"Bite back your words, or I will remove your tongue," Grumpf warned her.
Manolan Fay blanched and fell back against the door, knowing well from his tone that he was not speaking idly. The Archmage's eyes flared with frustration and rage, and he sneered and growled again. But then he sighed, the moment passing.
"She is not merely Quenthal any longer," Grumpf calmly explained. "She is not weak, nor is House Bayenry."
"We can do it through proxies,"
Manolan started to add, but Grumpf cut her short with a glare that froze the blood in her veins.
"Never speak of Kiorl again," Grumpf warned. "Are you so foolish to miss the small matter that the matron mother now has an illithid at her disposal? Methyl L. Videnvelp serves my sister as he once served my mother."
"As he has served your child," Manolan Fay reminded him.
"Do not presume to understand anything about methyl. And I say again, for the last time, never speak of Kiorl again."
"As you demand, Archmage,"
the High Priestess said, deferentially and wisely lowering her gaze to the floor.
Get back to House Bayenri and our child, Gromph ordered. You dare leave her unprotected in this time when demons haunt the ways of Menzo Berenzon.
Manolan Fay didn't look up and didn't answer, other than to slowly retreat back out the door, never turning her back to the Archmage. Gromph took little satisfaction in hearing her footsteps and the rustle of her robes rushing down the hall. Despite his outward anger, Gromph knew that her fear of Quenthel's growing power was correct. The old Archmage looked back out the window, shaking his head. Quenthel had been brilliant in so locking down the city. Perhaps that was what galled him most of all. And Gromph had erred, he knew. He had come to hope that Ivanel, his child, possessed of his mother's memories and soon enough to be crowned as matron mother of Menzo Berenzon, would serve as his ladder to ascension against the dark realities of Lolf's failure to secure the weave, and the Spider Queen's apparent indifference to him even had she succeeded. Soon enough, Quenthel would have matron mother Xerath begging her to keep the city of Cusor Lauren as a Bayenri satellite, and now, with a constant demonic threat lurking in every shadow, any movement by House Barrison Dalarmgo, House Malarn, House Hunsrin, or any others had surely been halted.
Brilliant, he admitted,
staring out at the city as another demonic fireball erupted. He glanced back at the door, at where Manolan Fay had been. Perhaps it was time for him to go and speak with the matron of House Fay Branch, Manolan's mother, Birton. One of the former conspirators. The one who had found Kjorl Odrin. A gray and ugly fog blew in, sometimes thin and blurring the giant mushroom stalks into ghostly figures, other times so thick as to block Camoriel's vision for more than a few feet in every direction. A great stench was carried on that steaming wind and fog, the aroma of rot and death, of burning flesh and hearty vomit. Camoriel was too disciplined to let that bother him. So many who came here to this wretched plane of existence grew distracted by the grotesque sights and smells, and that distraction often led to violent ends. The drow walked steadily, his eyes and his mind's eye probing all around him. He would not be caught off guard. He could hear her now, calling to him as she had done when he was a child, not with her physical voice, but psionically. Kimuriel Oblodra tried to hold his calm. He came in sight of her, of Kjorl, his mother, then, as she leaned against a mushroom stalk, looking every bit the same as she had on that awful day more than a century before, when Matron Mother Bayenri had wrenched the whole House Oblodra up by its stony roots and dropped it into the Claw Rift, the great chasm that split the cavern that housed Menzo Berenzon. Kjorl had gone over with that tumbling stalagmite house, and Camoriel had thought her dead. That notion hadn't bothered him too greatly, though. He had already all but left House Oblodra to join Jarlaxle's mercenary band, and he was not one to be bothered too greatly by such destructive and useless emotions as grief. Or elation, he pointedly told himself as he once again looked upon his mother. Gromph had sent him to Birton Fay, and she had directed him here, to the Abyss, to the throne of the great Baelor Ertu. To Kjorl Odrun, Ertu's slave.
My son, you are all that remains,
Kjorl greeted.
It would seem that you too...
No,
Kjorl interrupted.
I am dead in every way that matters. The prime material plane is beyond me now. My mortal coil no more than an illusion. A manifestation here to keep Ertu amused.
She paused and shot him the slyest of looks as she added,
for now.
Kimuriel couldn't miss the seething anger in her voice and behind her fiery eyes, orbs that had not lost a bit of their luster in the century and more of her imprisonment. After all these decades, the fiery and vicious Kjorl had not cooled.
Matron Mother Ivanel Bayenri is long dead, he said to try to calm her.
Cursed House Bayenri just replaces her one after another. But House Oblodra, our house, all that we had built is no more. You erred in the time of troubles,
Kimboriel bluntly replied.
You reached too high, and when the divine powers returned, you were punished for your hubris. We all were, but you survived.
Kimboriel shrugged, as if it hardly mattered.
And what have you done to repay Beenri?
Kiorl demanded sharply.
I?
Kimboriel replied incredulously.
I have served myself as I please, when I please, how I please.
With Jarlaxle?
Yes.
Jarlaxle Beenri,
Kiorl said pointedly, for she was one of the few who knew the truth of that strange, houseless mercenary.
It is not a name he uses.
He serves House Beenri, hardly.
Jarlaxle serves Jarlaxle.
Kiorl nodded, digesting it all.
It is time to pay them back, she said at length. Quenthal is a weakling and she is vulnerable.
She has tightened her noose on the city.
And when it loosens? A dragon is dead, the darkening has been defeated, and the fledgling city of Matron Mother Xerath hangs by a single strand of a spider's web.
I am surprised that you are so informed of the—
I have nothing but time,
Kiorl interrupted.
And Ertu torments me by showing me the turning of Menzel Baron's on without me.
Then you know that Matron Mother Beenri will see to Matron Mother Xerath's troubles as well.
With demons.
You know much for a slave in the Abyss,
Kimboriel said again, even allowing a bit of sarcasm into his normally impassive tone.
I know much because I am in the Abyss. Ertu does not fear me, surely, and so he does not fear letting me know of Menzo Berenson.
Demons, yes, said Kimboriel.
Kiorl gave a little laugh, a wicked one indeed.
You must be my conduit, Kimboriel. You must exact the punishment House Beenri rightly deserves.
Kimboriel dismissed that foolish notion, even as the Matron Mother spoke it. He wasn't about to go against Matron Mother Beenri and her vast array of powerful friends. Still, he heard and sympathized with every word. He hated Quenthal Beenri. Despite any logical protestations to the contrary, a simmering rage burned within Kimboriel Oblodra for all that he had lost, for all that House Beenri had taken from him. He watched again in his memories the tumbling structure of House Oblodra, pitching over the side of the Claw Rift, so many dark elves, his family tumbling into oblivion. For a long while, for many years, Kimboriel had hated House Beenri. When first he had learned of Jarlaxle's heritage, he had even considered murdering the mercenary. That was a long time ago, of course, but now, hearing Kiorl, Kimboriel realized that he hadn't dismissed those feelings of rage quite as thoroughly as he had believed.
I do not expect you to expose yourself to suspicion,
Kiorl said as if reading his thoughts, and she probably was, he reminded himself, throwing up more mental guards.
You ask me to serve as your instrument, your assassin against House Beenri, but do so without wishing me to expose myself to their wrath?
He asked skeptically.
Not my instrument, but my conduit to my instrument,
Kiorl said with a crooked and knowing little smile, one that took Kimboriel back across the centuries, one that he had known well in his youth.
A mighty Beenri studies under you, I am told,
Kiorl said.
It was beginning to bother Kimboriel more than a little just how much Kiorl was being told.
The Archmage, no less, she said.
Kimboriel remained impassive. There was no need to confirm anything, apparently.
And how does Gromph Beenri feel about his sister, the Matron Mother, filling the streets of Menzo Berenzon with demons?
He thinks it a brilliant ploy to insulate the Matron Mother from the wrath of the ruling council over her choices.
But how does he feel? Is he pleased by his sister Quenthal's dangerous ploy?
You clearly know the answer.
He hates her, they all do,
Kiorl said.
She imposes order on a city of chaos. It will not stand.
I will not stop it. Not directly. I do not enjoy cryptic conversations, Matron Mother, Kim Muriel said. And what he really didn't enjoy, and he knew that this drow in front of him understood it well, was not being able to read her thoughts. Kim Muriel was used to holding a huge advantage in such conversations, with all but the mind flayers and Jarlaxle, for he could read the meaning behind every word with a simple glance into the flittering thoughts as the words were spoken.
"Fan the flames in the Archmage's humors," Kyorl explained. "Subtly suggest a way for him to strike back at his sister. Let him battle demon with demon."
"You ask me to implant a suggestion into the mind of the Archmage to summon demons of his own? Into the mind of Gromph Beanry?" Kim Muriel didn't try to hide his doubts. Those dark elves expecting and hoping for a long life simply didn't do such things.
"It will be no difficult task. Gromph's thoughts already flow in that direction."
Movement to the side caught Kimuriel's attention, and he noted a massive, leather-winged beast moving toward them, one he knew to be the mighty Baelor Ertu. The creature moved close enough to tower over Kimuriel and sniff the air a few times before plopping down in a mushroom fashioned into a throne just off to the side, one Kimuriel hadn't even noticed before. Had Ertu brought it with him?
"To have Gromph call in a Baelor, perhaps?" Kimuriel asked Kyorl. But he was looking at Ertu.
"Think bigger," Kyorl replied. "Perhaps Gromph will think he is calling forth a peer of Ertu. But let his spell draw a bigger prize, a prize beyond his control."
"You?" Kimuriel asked dryly. Both Kyorl and Ertu laughed at that.
"You cannot return to the prime material plane at this time," Kim Muriel said to Ertu.
The Baelor growled but nodded. Ertu had been defeated on the prime material plane and so banished a penalty of a century of exile.
"Banished by a Beanry," Kyorl said. "Tiago Beanry."
"Who is now Tiago Doerden, if he is even still alive," said Kim Muriel.
"All the more reason to hate him," said Ertu.
The demon stared hard at Kimuriel and focused his thoughts at the drow psionicist, who was overwhelmed by the sheer wall of demonic hate emanating from the creature.
"What do you know of the Faerseris?"
Kyorl asked.
"What every drow of Menzo Berenzon is taught at the academy," said Kimuriel.
The Faerseris was a region of the Underdark teeming with magical energy. The very stones of the region glowed with the power of magic, both the weave and the extraplanar energies of the lower planes. Through the emanations of the Faerseris, the drow gained their innate magical abilities and their innate resistance to magic. With the permeating glow of the Faerseris, drow smiths fashioned their fabulous weapons and armor. As the sun nurtured the surface world with its warmth and life energy, so the Faerseris fed the darkness of the Underdark.
"I will give you a spell," Kyorl said and closed her eyes. "Open your mind."
Kimuriel similarly closed his eyes and focused on receiving and studying Kyorl's psionic impartation. He didn't know all the words, for it was an arcane chant and not a psionic pattern.
"Give that to Gromph during your sessions," she bade him. "Bit by bit, inflection by inflection, let him find the strength to battle his sister and foil her plans. And so we will pay back House Beanry."
Kimuriel opened his eyes to stare at her intently.
"Would it so pain you to see House Beanry punished and Menzo Berenzon thrust back into chaos?" she asked. "Would not Bragan de Earth profit from such tribulations?"
"And you would find a deep sense of sweet revenge?"
"Do you expect me to deny it?"
Kyorl asked.
"No."
"And would you not share in your mother's satisfaction?"
Kimuriel said nothing.
"Then we are agreed?" Kyorl asked.
"When next Methil summons me to Gromp's chamber to continue our work,
I will offer him a view of what he might do to counter the Matron Mother, and too I will begin showing him a more powerful gate to the Abyss.
He will light the Thaesris with the power of that spell, and oh, but his surprise will delight you, my noble son.
Despite himself, Kimuriel grinned. He nodded and bowed deferentially to the mighty Ertu, then bent time and space and was once more back in Faerun, in a tavern called One-Eyed Jack's, in the port city of Luskan.
"What is wrong?"
Matron Mother Xerath asked when Sabrak walked into her private chamber, unannounced and without knocking. She could see the look on her most powerful ally's face, though, and so she knew he had not shown the disrespect out of anything more than abject misery.
"Sabrak!"
she demanded, as he moved over and numbly sat down on a chair across from her.
"I looked in on the Silver Marches," he said, his voice a defeated monotone. "I went to see if I could confirm the areas where our other warriors likely fell. It would make the corpse summoning easier, of course, if we knew." His voice trailed off.
"What do you know?"
Matron Mother Xerath asked, moving forward, sliding from her chair and across the floor to kneel before the seated mage, one hand on his knee, the other holding him by the chin, forcing him to look into her eyes.
"It's gone," he said.
Matron Mother Xerath's face screwed up with confusion as she tried to decipher that.
"It's? What is gone?"
"The Dwyamer."
"The Dwyamer?"
she echoed. But suddenly it hit her and her eyes widened.
"The gift Lady Loth imparted through my physical form," Sabrak confirmed. "The darkening, Matron. It is gone."
"Gone? The sky over the Silver Marches is cleared?"
"The sun shines brightly," the despondent wizard replied.
"How can this be?"
Matron Mother Xerath looked all around. She rolled away from Sabrak and up to her feet to begin pacing, muttering to herself. The implications were staggering. The darkening had been channeled through Sabrak, through a representative of House Zor-Lauren, who had become the Archmage of Cue Zor-Lauren. Sabrak was a powerful wizard, none would doubt that. But Xerath wanted him spoken of in the same hushed tones normally reserved for Gromph Beenri alone. The darkening was the achievement that afforded him that possibility. The darkening had elevated him in the eyes of all the drow. Few in Menzo Berenzon would utter the name of Sabrak Zor-Lauren without the title of Archmage attached.
But now it was gone. Would the others see this as a sign that Sabrak had lost the favor of Loth? Matron Mother Xerath wondered. Would they extend that criticism to House Zor-Lauren, to Cue Zor-Lauren? "I felt the power," she heard Sabrak muttering to himself, and she turned back to regard him. He sat in the chair, eyes downcast, shaking his head slowly.
"True power," he said. "The goddess flowed through me in beauteous power. She would take the weave and make of it the web. The new age would be heralded in, and I, Sabrak, would lead that new age."
"You alone?"
Matron Mother Xerath asked sharply, and Sabrak looked up at her.
"House Zor-Lauren," he quickly corrected himself. "Who better? We have the most wizards. You have ever exalted in them, in us, in me, and have given to the males of your family hope unknown among the others of Menzo Berenzon. I was positioned, we were positioned,"
Matron Mother Xerath interrupted. Sabrak nodded.
"But it is gone, Matron Mother. The skies are bright once more, and there were whispers."
He lowered his gaze once more and looked as if he might break down.
"What did you hear, Sabrak?"
Matron Mother Xerath demanded.
"When you walked among the folk of the Silver Marches, what did you hear?"
"Mialiki, the goddess," he whispered. "It is said that she countered my magic, and did so through the body of the heretic Driz Doerden."
He looked up as Matron Mother Xerath gasped.
"I have failed the Spider Queen," Sabrak said. "You should give me to the Primordial." Matron Mother Xerath dismissed that with a snort and waved away Zabrak's words.
If you truly failed the Spider Queen, we would make of you a drider, fool.
Then do so.
Shut up, she ordered.
She rushed back at Zabrak and skidded down to put her face right near his.
You did not fail. The magic failed, or expired, or was defeated. We cannot know which. How draining was it for the Spider Queen to hold back the light of the sun on the world above? Perhaps she intended the darkening for only a certain period of time, and when our people withdrew, what was to be gained by holding strong to it?
It pains me to think that our beloved goddess has suffered yet another defeat.
Enough of such foolishness, Matron Mother Xerath warned.
And one with which I was so intimately involved, the wizard said.
We do not even know that it was a defeat,
Matron Mother Xerath reminded him. We will continue our work in bringing home our fallen and properly disposing of them. We will give due thanks to the Spider Queen with our every action. We cannot know her thoughts. And so we act with only good intentions to her, Our Lady of Chaos.
Zabrak stared for a long time, but gradually began to nod.
Thank you, he said.
My shock, say no more about it,
Matron Mother Xerath interrupted. She pulled his head close against her and stroked his short, thick mop of white hair, comforting him, cooing softly in his ear, reassuring him. But inside, Matron Mother Xerath was anything but calm or reassured. Zabrak's dismay was clear, and surely a straight line from it to the now failed darkening gave him reason to worry. For Matron Mother Xerath, though, that fear was multiplied 100-fold. She was, until recently, the matron mother of the third house of Menzo Berenzon, Lolth's own city. She was a high priestess of Lolth, but she was not much like her peers, not the Beanries or the fanatical Melarni. Matron Mother Xerath did not adhere to the hierarchy so common in Menzo Berenzon. House Orlaren's power came from the men of the house, not the women, from the wizards and not the priestesses. It had been Matron Mother Xerath's hunch that this would be the new paradigm, and she thought her instincts correct when Lolth made a try for the goddess Mistra's weave. She thought her efforts well rewarded when Zabrak, not Gromph Beanri, had been chosen to enact the darkening. In the new paradigm, would any house hold higher favor with Lady Lolth than House Orlaren? Would not her new city become the glorious enclave of Lolth, and so Menzo Berenzon would be the satellite? But now the darkening was no more. And Cus Orlaren was burying scores of dead. Xerath had suffered great losses in her entourage, in her family. Lolth was angry, Xerath believed. Would she focus that anger on Cus Orlaren, on Zabrak, on Xerath herself? She continued to stroke Sabrak's hair for a long while, drawing as much comfort as she was giving for what that was worth. Matron Mother Xerath, who understood well the wrath of the Spider Queen, feared that it wasn't worth much.
Ertu chuckled, a wet and throaty noise that sounded as if it was soon to be accompanied by fountaining gouts of vomit.
You are a beautiful one, he said to the small figure standing in front of him.
Off to the side, out of the swirling, fetid mists, came a hulking, vulture-like vrock, a battered drow form writhing in one of its powerful, clawed hands. On a nod from the other drow female, a doppelganger to this very captive, the vrock dropped its battered prisoner and bird hopped away into the shadows. That drow, prone in the muck, managed to turn her filthy head to regard the other, the one that looked exactly like her, but looked like her for only a moment longer, as the impostor Kjorl bust free of that restrictive drow form to become once more a creature with the lower torso and legs of a gigantic spider, and the shapely upper body and painfully beautiful face of the most exquisite drow of all. She held up her right hand, nodding contentedly at the small digits that had already regrown to replace the ones Baelor's lightning sword had taken from her. Kjorl whined and buried her face in the muck before the deadly brilliance of Lady Lolth.
Your physical beauty is exceeded only by the beauty of your cunning, goddess,
Ertu said, grinning widely.
When Gromph weakens the barrier, Menzo Berenzon will know chaos as never before,
Loth replied.
And you will rid yourself of the pesky demon lords, and when they have abandoned the abyss to play in the underdark of Toril, you will build your army,
said Ertu.
Beware your tongue, Ertu,
Loth warned.
Your betters lurk in the fog.
The mighty Baelor grunted but nodded.
We had all thought you defeated Spider Queen,
Ertu said.
When you lost the weave, and then watched as Tiamat's plans too were foiled, we wondered truly if perhaps you would recede.
In reminding me, do you gain pleasure, Ertu? Loth asked. For I should remind you that were I to destroy you here in this place, your home, you would truly be obliterated, never to return.
But it is a great compliment that I offer, said the Baelor. For you have not receded, skulking into the shadows, and truly, great lady of spiders, great goddess of chaos, this ambition and plan are your greatest scheme of all.
And you stand to gain, she reminded him.
He nodded, growled wickedly, and smiled hopefully.
Did I not promise you that Baelor would be removed? That you could thrive in his absence?
Unending ambition, great lady of chaos, said Ertu,
who was clearly elated by the developments.
It is how we survive the boredom of passing millennia, is it not?
And yet, if you climb to the highest point you will ever know, it will leave you merely at the lowest point I have ever known,
Loth said, a most vicious reminder of their relative stations. Ertu scowled.
Do not kill this one,
Loth instructed. She waved her hand, and a powerful roll of energy lifted Kyurl from the floor and sent her flipping and spinning through the air.
I might need her again.
Kill her?
Ertu asked, as if the very thought was preposterous.
Torturing her brings me great pleasure, lady of pleasure and pain.
I feel the same way about Baelors,
Loth remarked, and she was simply gone in a puff of acrid black smoke.
And do take care that she cannot use her psionic trumpets to warn Demogorgon or Grozzet or any of the other demon lords.
Ertu sat on his throne and tapped his clawed fingernails together in front of his flame-filled eyes.
So much to hate. That was his nourishment.